is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. House lawmakers late Friday adopted a roughly $1.2 trillion measure. This was the infrastructure bill that they've been trying real hard to get through. Of course, the debate is that a lot of this isn't infrastructure and that it's only, there's maybe, 10% or so, they say, and a lot of it, the rest of it is social programs, that kind of thing. The Washington Post says they delivered President Biden a major legislative win. Now, this gets real interesting, my friends, for a whole host of reasons. Now, remember, you have the $3.5 trillion bill that the progressives, your socialists, were holding. They were holding the infrastructure bill up because they wanted that bill passed. And there's been a real struggle for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She's lost complete control, it seems, of the House. But you know, at the end of the day, the one thing you have to say about Pelosi is she surely pulls it off, doesn't she? And I think everybody was waiting this time around to see if the speaker could make this happen. Now, how did she do it, you ask? Well, here's how she did it. It was bipartisan, 228 to 206, and she could not have done it without Republican support. That's what's remarkable about this moment here. So you had about 13 Republicans that jumped in, because without that, this was no go. It was a fail all the way around. Now, Congressman Matt Gaetz says, "I can't believe Republicans just gave the Democrats their socialism bill." And again, he references there what I said moments ago, that if this was all infrastructure and it was really for the betterment of the American people, terrific. Maybe you'd get that bipartisan support. But like everything or most things coming out of Washington, there's a lot of trickery involved in these kinds of things. And this is what you have here. Now, in the meantime, there are a lot of questions about that other bill. They're still saying they're going to come back with that. We don't really know yet what will happen, but they're saying they'll have that before Thanksgiving. You know, the thing I often reference to you is when Washington now talks in trillions. I mean, when I was a kid, we never talked the word trillions. I mean, that was like, you know, not something you could wrap your mind around. What is $1 trillion? And I started thinking about that because, you know, a lot of the shenanigans and debt playing in Washington is now in the conversation of trillions. It's no longer billions, and surely hasn't been millions in some time. So I started thinking, what is $1 trillion exactly? What does that really equate to? Question, maybe to rephrase this, how tall is $1 trillion in $100 bills? Well, interesting. The Endowment for Human Development says this. Just wrap your mind around this a moment. The height of a stack of $1,000,000 bills measures 4,300 inches or 358 feet, about the height of a 30 to 35 story building. But here's what's interesting. The height of a stack of $1 trillion bills. Now, this is laying flat down now. Just so you know how narrow a bill is, right? I mean, this is flat. This is not standing upright, okay? Would measure 67,866 miles. That would reach more than one fourth the way from the Earth to the moon. Wrap your mind around that just a moment. Wow. And that's $1 trillion. And if you take that further and you look at the fact that our national debt is $29 trillion, we will surely be well over 30 and down the road once all this clears the dust. You can see we can probably get to other planets at that point. And that's what's happening there with the bill. So very interesting. The other big, big story is November 2nd, and that is, wow. You know, we hear a lot of story about red waves, blue waves, and any kind of a wave prior to an election, right? I mean, we always hear that. Everybody gets their side revved up and what's going to happen. Well, this was interesting. This may be, you may look back at November 2nd and look, even though it wasn't a midterm election or a general election, there was some significant things happening. And probably historically, we'll look back and know that this was quite the red wave. We haven't seen this happen in quite some time, this sort of a national sweep. There were five lessons from election night 2021, Brookings Institute says. Let me share those five with you real quick because they're fascinating. Number one, all politics is no longer local, they say. The second, the cultural wars are alive and well. That's speaking about CRT and all of that, of course, in Virginia. The third, Donald Trump is still a player, but how much of a player? Well, depends on where. And the fourth is crime is a big issue and defund the police a loser. That's like, okay, duh. I mean, we could have told you that. And the fifth one is socialism is not appealing to the American voter. Boy, that is a saving grace for all of us, if that's the case, isn't it? So I think my point here with this whole election business is this, my friends. I think a lot of Americans were waiting, struggling to see what would happen on November 2nd and really understand, would this country really adopt these socialist behaviors and move forward with a socialist agenda? Or would there be pushback? That's the significance of this wave we talked about just a moment ago. This was a big deal. This was about as big as any election we've probably had, quite frankly, because the telltale signs were there. Had the country fully embraced these policies, that would have given a lot of empowerment to the Biden administration and the socialist progressive wing of the Democrat Party, which has surely become the dominant force of that party. Wow. Well, listen, as we talk to you today, we are now celebrating four big years here on Viewpoint this Sunday. Four big years on America Out Loud Talk Radio is Viewpoint. And it's hard to believe we launched this news magazine 4 years ago, and we have a new format and style we're starting with here, and we'll get started with the top stories here with Senator Ron Johnson joins me now. And Senator Johnson, now he served as the chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. He's now the ranking member for the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, serves on the Budget, Foreign Relations, Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committees. Okay, Senator Johnson, you know, wow. Let's start with the infrastructure bill first. Now, the bill heads to the president's desk for final approval. Now, the Senate voted 69-30. That was back in August, as we know. You had, the only way this passed, again, was the 13 Republicans in the House, which now this is going to obviously become a thing, this infrastructure bill. In August, you issued the following statement. You voted no, first of all, on the infrastructure bill, and you put this statement out there officially. We need to spend money on infrastructure. We also need to stop further mortgaging our children's future. What's so unfortunate about the infrastructure bill just passed is we could have accomplished both goals by repurposing money from the Democrats' 100% partisan COVID relief bill. That isn't even spent until 2022 through 2028. Instead, the bill supporters deceived the public into thinking their bill was paid for. Well, they kept using this zero comment, zero, which is boggles the mind. Smoke and mirror gimmicks, you call it. The Congressional Budget Office didn't buy their fuzzy math and said the bill will add $256 billion. And that's probably being very kind, by the way, to our national debt. There's no way I would support that deception from the swamp's big spenders. This is just the first step, you say. This is the key now. And the Democrats' plans to pass their $5 trillion plus radical tax and spend agenda, and I simply couldn't help facilitate it. This bill passing is not good news for America, is it?
I don't think so. Listen, as I said in that statement, and by the way, hello, Malcolm, hope you're doing well. We do need to spend money on infrastructure. And in normal times, when we weren't $29 trillion in debt, when our annual deficits weren't exceeding $1 trillion a year, I'd be willing to borrow money to pay for infrastructure. I mean, that's what we do when you take out a mortgage on your house. But these aren't normal times. We've already mortgaged our kids' future. We need to stop further mortgaging it. And as I said in that announcement, there was a way of paying, for infrastructure, $700 billion worth, by just repurposing the out-year spending from the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. I mean, it's obviously not COVID relief when it's not going to be spent, starting 2022 through 2028. So that should have been the Republican position from day one. Now, I think there was some calculus on the part of Republican senators that if we supported Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, showing that there is bipartisan support for infrastructure spending, so that, in other words, you had to compromise and I guess some deficit spending and increase the size of the package, maybe that would satisfy those two senators so they won't support Bernie's budget. you know, the what, and by the way, whatever CBO comes out in terms of the score, it's going to be dishonest, because what Democrats are doing is they are creating new entitlements. And as Ronald Reagan aptly stated, the closest thing to eternal life on this earth is a government program. So they're creating these new government programs. They're only scoring them for a limited amount of time, not the full 10-year budget window. And we know once a new entitlement is granted, it's almost impossible to take away. That's why, you know, Bernie's budget, when it was scored about $3.5 trillion, Maya McGuinness's group came out and said, no, this is more like five and a half trillion. I don't think there's been that much taken out of even the 3.5 to whittle this thing down to 1.75 that they're talking about now. I know they've, you know, ditched a couple programs, but I think what they've primarily done is if they've scored something for 5 years, they pulled it back to a year or two. Again, it's all but budget gimmickry. We can't afford any new entitlements. We should fix the entitlements we have. Do everything we can to bring deficit spending under control, but that is not the path we're on, Malcolm, which is why we're facing increasing inflation, low growth rates. As I wrote in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, you know, we have all the ingredients for stagflation. I think we're probably in stagflation right now.
Yeah. Now, this larger bill, they call it the Build Back Better bill, which I think, you know, initially they're talking about $3.5 trillion, but even that $3.5 trillion was a lot of tricky math, senators, from what I understand. I've seen many reports that the $3.5 trillion, even if it was that, would probably be about $6 or $7 trillion in cost because of what you say. These programs, they sort of grow like mold on a counter. They continue to grow and they never go away, as you say. But now they tried to pare that down. Manchin said he would only support the 1.5. Main part of the party, the moderates, said they would wait for the CBO to score this, and then they're going to try to push this through. Does this thing, I mean, you know, they're pretty good at pulling out victories at the last minute. And Pelosi is, I mean, say what you want, Senator, but she's, I don't say this with any jump in my step, but she's a remarkable politician. She never ceases to amaze the system, so to speak, you know, right or wrong. Does this thing get through at all? What is this? What's your forecast on this Build Back Better thing that they're still going to be pursuing pretty aggressively?
I mean, I'm hoping and praying it won't, but my gut tells me it probably will. I mean, this is a negotiation. So you've got the different factions within the Democrat Party laying out and staking out positions, and they're not going to give in until the very last minute. But in the end, it's kind of hard to think the Democrats, if they have an opportunity to spend another couple $1 trillion that we don't have, they're not going to pass up that opportunity. I mean, Malcolm, think how absurd that is. I mean, you've got one political party, that's all they're pushing for is more deficit spending, creating greater dependency on government. You know, rather than trying to grow our economy by having a competitive tax system, a reasonable regulatory environment, they're all about new government programs, new entitlements, when, you know, in other words, paying people not to work, when the biggest impediment to economic growth right now is we don't have enough people in the labor force. We can't entice people off the sidelines because, again, Democrats are happy to pay them not to work. So, again, it's just insane what Democrats are proposing in today's economic conditions. But that's who they are. I've often said that it's true that President Biden and members of his administration are incompetent, but that's way too kind, because this is their policy. This is what they want. They want open borders. I don't think they're particularly troubled by the 1.7 million people that have been apprehended by Border Patrol, or the 600,000 or 700,000 that may be coming through the borders as known or unknown gotaways. Yeah. This is what they want. They like increasing debt. They like increasing deficits. I don't get it, but you know, I'll never understand the liberal mind.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You're exactly right. Listen, I went to the national debt clock this morning. I tend to go there when I if I want an upset stomach, it's surely the place to go. And I went to see what the latest, of course, I knew it was about $29 trillion. And sure enough, we're just approaching $29 trillion. Well, this is before all this other, like I say, dust happens here and all this other spending. So Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, she says, back to the debt ceiling, raising that debt ceiling, which was, of course, a fight just last month here. So we'll run out again money about early December. I think less than a month from now, they're predicting around the first part of December, December 3rd or so. I keep saying numbers four. That's going to be another debate, this debt limit thing. How do you, and now the reason I bring that up is Mitch McConnell, he drew another red line if he holds that position. When they went on, and there was a lot of dispute on that when he went along with it last time, he vowed that Republicans will not offer any more assistance to raise the national's debt ceiling. And that was it. He sent a letter, in fact, to President Biden saying that that's it. The U.S., he would rather default on its national debt rather than work with Democrats any further on bankrupt in our country. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I led the letter that 46 Republican senators signed prior to the last red line that said we wouldn't participate in that. Right. But then Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema apparently told Leader McConnell that they would actually blow up the filibuster if we didn't back off of that. And so that's what some Republicans did last month. Now, you know, from my standpoint, I think what Leader McConnell's been trying to do now is point out that the only reason that Chuck Schumer has to not utilize reconciliation procedures is he said he didn't have enough time, even though we warned him back in August and, you know, this thing came to a head in October. He had plenty of time to use reconciliation. We won't block his use of reconciliation for increase the debt ceiling. We just don't want to assist them. They have all the capability to increase the debt ceiling to accommodate their reckless deficit spending. And that's the point that Leader McConnell and Republicans are making to Democrats is, listen, you're the folks increasing deficit spending on a partisan basis. You have to increase the debt ceiling yourself to accommodate your own spending. So I don't know how this plays out this time, but Leader Schumer has more than enough time. I know there's discussions right now of, you know, basically bypassing the budget committee. I don't think Republicans would necessarily object to that, but just, you know, have them use the reconciliation process. And the reason that's important, Malcolm, mm-hmm. is what Republicans don't want to see is give Democrats a blank check by just suspending the debt ceiling. We want them to name a figure, and that will, you know, restrain them in terms of how much deficit spending they can actually pass because they're going to have to deal with the debt ceiling. From my standpoint, this was really the Republican position beginning this Congress, is that any increase in the debt ceiling should be accompanied by some additional measure of fiscal control. I suggested the Prevent Government Shutdown Act that I passed, I think, unanimously out of my committee when I was chair. That would be a good fiscal control, the Full Faith and Credit Act, which prevents default. By the way, this is a manufactured crisis. We have so much revenue coming to the federal government, we can easily service our debt. There's no reason to default on our debt. Now, you have to prioritize spending. There's no doubt about that. That would be painful to do, which would prompt Congress to get their act together and start passing appropriation bills. And, you know, should prompt the Democrats to increase the debt ceiling because this is their deficit spending now. They're in control of government. And that's the main point we've been trying to make.
Right, right. You know, you think about where we would be at this moment in an odd sort of way, Senator, without Sinema and Manchin, as you say. You know, when those two Senate seats were lost in Georgia, that was a gasp from many Americans who knew that we could be in a heap of trouble. And then luckily, Sinema and Manchin have been holding the line as moderates more of the traditional Democrat, which is totally lost. It doesn't exist anymore. But it did here, exactly. And, you know, even Bill Maher, the liberal commentator, I guess you call him, you know, he come out and he says he supported Sinema and Manchin because they've been harassed. You've seen Manchin over the last couple of days. They're surrounding his car and banging on it and doing all kinds of things, walking with Sinema into the bathrooms and things of that nature. And Maher comes out and says, here's my question. Does spending more money make you a better person or a bigger moderate, he says. He says, and maybe these two, Sinema and Manchin, might have their thumb more on the pulse of the average Democrat in this country. It's a pretty fascinating comment, isn't it?
I think so. I'd like to think that the Democrat Party has been taken over by a small percentage of radicals within their ranks.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, you've got there's the support of the Democrat Party in the mainstream media and the social media. And I think so many people in the media and social media are pretty radical leftists themselves. So, you know, they're willing to hide these facts. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to portray President Biden as a moderate and allow him to campaign from his basement, and they still get him elected. But I think what's happening now is even the mainstream media can't cover up for all these disasters. I mean, the open border, you know, the crisis on our border, the massive deficit spending, increase in our debt, the embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan. But as much as the mainstream media is trying, I mean, they're not covering the crisis on the border. They've moved away from Afghanistan. That was a 1 week story. Yeah. The American people are still aware of that. And I think that's what we saw in November's elections, plus just the most grotesquely arrogant comment by the gubernatorial candidate there, Terry McAuliffe, saying that, and by the way, this is what liberals believe, that we don't think parents should have any role or any say in what we teach your children. This is the government. We will decide for you what we indoctrinate your children with. And that is outrageous. It's grossly arrogant. I think in the end, that's probably what costs to Terry McAuliffe that election.
Well, let's talk about that big red wave, I guess, in 2021. You see the five lessons I put out there, which kind of ties this all together, Senator, I mentioned from the Brookings Institute. I went right down the 1, 2, 3, 4. The fifth one, socialism is not appealing to the American voter. That was sort of, to me, the real measure of this election, which really was a bigger election than many people thought, once we see the results. That fifth point is very interesting. And this wave, what was your reaction when you seen the results of November 2nd? I mean, seriously, when you get up the next morning, do you sort of breathe a temporary sigh of relief and say, wow, we missed a bullet there, or wow, we really did some pretty good things. Maybe there is hope in America. Because I know you've been really unsettled with what's happening in our country from all our previous talks. I mean, I know that about you. What was your reaction to this 2021 election?
Well, it was a ray of hope. But again, I don't put too much stock in just any one particular election. You know, conservatives have made this mistake in the past, whether it's the election of Ronald Reagan and then Donald Trump. So, okay, we finally defeated him, and now we can go on with their lives. The disadvantage conservatives have in the political realm is we really don't want much involvement with the government at all. We just want government off our backs. We want to be able to live our life. For liberals, serving in government is a lifelong ambition. And so they are totally tuned in to government at all levels. They've completely taken over school boards and city councils and county boards, that type of thing. So I've been going around Wisconsin imploring people to, you know, first of all, show up respectfully, don't break laws, make your views known to school boards, but you need to start running for school board yourself. The left is relentless in growing government, which takes away our freedom. We need to be every bit as relentless defending our freedom. So, yeah, I'm encouraged by what happened on Tuesday, but we can't give up. I mean, that was, again, a specific issue, I think, cost, and a specific comment cost Terry McAuliffe his seat. We're going to have the mainstream media continue to sing the siren song for socialism, promise all these benefits, without describing the harm, as Margaret Thatcher wisely said, that the problem with socialism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money. Mm-hmm. The press doesn't point out that fact. Yeah. And so, let's face it, free stuff from the government is pretty appealing to an awful lot of people. And we have politicians saying, we're going to make somebody else pay for it. And we're just going to tax the rich and that'll pay for these trillions of dollars deficit spending. It won't. You're going to pay for it with higher inflation rates, with lower economic growth, reduced opportunities, and higher taxes. There's no way you can pay for all this without taxing everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right. And everybody pays one way, shape, form, or another, because you pay in the sign of inflation, you pay in the high of goods costing more, and you're paying because all of these dollars are passed on to the American people at the end of the day. I mean, I always laugh when they say we're going to tax millionaires out of their gourd. What do you think? These are the people who put the money back in and invest, and it's just a talking point that is missed by so many. this election then in a capsule, Senator, with what's taken place here, you know, looking at this from a red and blue side again, it's more than just that CRT comment, I think, from McAuliffe, who you mentioned just a moment ago, from McAuliffe. It's more than just that, because they won the lieutenant governor, they won the attorney general. They look at all the seats they won in the House of Virginia. You've got the defund the police was turned back. You've got council members back to local races that you just talked about. There was a lot of local races where Republicans did very well. So it really was an eye-opening moment. But isn't this sort of America at the, I mean, back to that hope or glimmer and back to the shiny city on a hill that Reagan always references, that sort of, it never should we rest on those laurels, by the way. We need to build on this in a big way. And that really is the question, the momentum now coming into 2022. What did this election do? Does it put Americans, do they understand the fight? And are they in the game to win 2022? And because if they do the same thing in 2022 and the House and the Senate, which are up, that could be a landmark moment for this country, because we really are deciding if we're going to be a socialist nation right now at this very moment. Are we not?
No, there's no doubt about it. You know, Malcolm, I stepped out the plate in 2010 because I was panicked for our nation. Here we are in 2021. I'm way more panicked. And I can feel it as I go around Wisconsin, as I talk to people really around the nation. Yeah. You know, people are literally coming up to me with tears in their eyes about we have to save this country. This upcoming election is literally going to be about can the truth prevail? Can it overcome the lies and distortion from Democrats, from the media, from the social media? It's going to be a contest about between those that truly love this country, that know what made this country great, and the people that want to fundamentally transform it, that think of America as a systemically racist country, which we are not. You know, people that just really don't like this country, bottom line, you know, or certainly their leaders don't, because I've asked this repeatedly, do you even like, much less love something you want to fundamentally transform? Now, I'm not saying Democrats don't love this country. What I'm saying is they're electing leaders that don't, because you don't fundamentally transform something that you love or that you like. That's something that you don't like. And so that's what I think this really boils down to. And there's no doubt about that. The election on Tuesday was about Democrat overreach. I think Americans are just sitting back in shock with the leftist agenda. But again, the media and social media is powerful. And so that's why I'm not going to, you know, sit back and rest. I breathe a slight sigh of relief, but we've got to fight, and we've got to fight long and hard if we're going to preserve this nation that we also dearly love.
Senator Johnson, when do you make the decision about 2022? When do you make it?
Well, I've certainly stepped up the conversations with the people that I need to talk to make that decision. And I have gone to the public saying that the decision is not in the distant future. So I'll be deciding in relatively short order.
Yeah, because we're now approaching 2022 and all hands are going to be on deck. Any insight at all to which way you're leaning?
I'll give you that insight when I announce the decision. But again, I've stepped up my efforts. I'm having, you know, multiple conversations. There are multiple factors. There's no doubt about it. But I think you and your listeners can tell I haven't lost any passion here. I understand that we need to do everything if we're going to preserve this great nation. So
yeah. Well, what's remarkable about you, Senator Johnson, as you just said a moment ago, you got involved in 2010 to make that ultimate difference. Really, a citizen legislature, not a career politician. You're exactly what the framers had envisioned, frankly, you know, and you're involved now in all the right reasons you got involved. I mean, I know you felt the danger then, and I appreciate what you said moments ago. The danger now is even more so. And we are on this teeter-totter sort of thing. So this is going to be a big decision for you. Of course, you've got to weigh in your family and your personal aspect of things. But in any event, I just want you to know we appreciate you as a patriotic conservative in your voice. And you've held true to the principles you ran on. And so I really appreciate that, Senator.
Well, I appreciate what you do. And if I do decide to run, I'm going to need a lot of help. It is going to be a blistering campaign, not particularly fun, but it would be important. So I would need all the help I could get from you and your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are behind you for sure to help save America here. Senator Ron Johnson here, always terrific to get his perspective. Well, listen, this is our four-year anniversary here on Viewpoint this Sunday. Wow, it is a wow, isn't it, here to think we've launched this 4 years ago. It was about a year and a half after the launch of the network, in fact, which was April 2016 on America Out Loud. And you know, my friends, we've accomplished so much together, and I really appreciate your support. This is the number one show on the network, and it's because of you out there and being supportive of this agenda and the things that we try to do each and every Sunday to bring to you here. So now listen, it's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. All the articles, columns, great writers, our shows, our hosts, all our shows go to podcast, of course. And of course, this show is 10 a.m. is the live version. You catch that Sunday morning. Is the first hearing of this. And then there is an encore at 6 p.m. later in the day on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I think all of you know at this point on the iHeart Radio Network, if you have the iHeart app, just look up America Out Loud Talk Radio. Once you have it, it'll be favored and we'll be in there every time. And that's through iHeart itself. Other than that, our own apps on Apple, Android, Alexa are free. They're terrific. They work. They're a blessing. And we get so many new app holders every single day. We also have a world-class media player, which is fantastic. We just upgraded it, in fact. If you go to the Listen Live link button at America Out Loud, you'll see what I'm saying. It's terrific. So that's another thing to check out on the platform. We're going to now, with this new format, we're going to have a panel discussion in just a moment to discuss a lot of what we just talked about and bring these so many important topics forward with you all. We'll rejoin you right after the pause here. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, you know, I have to put a good word in for Healthy Cell. They have three lines of products that I've been using now for months. One is Immune Super Boost, which is a daily supplement designed to supercharge your immunity. And boy, do we need this now with COVID-19 and the revelation that the COVID-19 spike protein could be in our body for a year and a half after the illness or after vaccination. The next product is Focus and Memory. And again, this brain fog that happens in the long COVID syndrome and even occurs in the post-vaccination syndrome appears to be really calling for a lot of the essential ingredients in the Focus product for Healthy Cell. And then lastly, my favorite product is the sleep product. The REM Sleep Healthy Cell product has a wonderful blend of combinations of key elements to restore normal sleep architecture. It's very important. It's different than getting put to sleep or forced to sleep. Getting a healthy sleep and having normal sleep architecture is quality sleep. And when we have good quality sleep, we have lower stress hormones during the day. We feel better. And I'm telling you, I'm not going to bed tonight until I've taken my Healthy Cell REM Sleep product. So go to healthycell.com. And when you order, hit the promo box and type in Out Loud. That will give you a 20% discount off the products. Try them. Try a box. Try all three and do your own self-assessment. I know I've done it. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all. We join you back on Viewpoint this Sunday here. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly. And thank you for being with us on the mission, my friends. And Wow, a lot of big stories now, starting with this so-called infrastructure bill, which is not really infrastructure, but by Washington's standards, it's the doublespeak sort of thing. So you never really know what they're talking about, nor do you ever know what's in the bills. You just sort of vote like pin the tail on the donkey. You put the blind on your eyes and you hope like hell you hit something, right? And that's sort of the way they govern up there in Washington. It's pretty sick, actually, truth be told. This infrastructure bill, and you look at, everybody is for, first of all, let me say this, great infrastructure. I don't think that's a Democrat or Republican thing. I don't believe it. Really true. This is, come on. This is an American thing. I mean, everybody wants to be able to, be on a safe road or a safe bridge or a port and everything that involves infrastructure. Problem is they've taken infrastructure and they've tied it all into social programs. And now they're calling it people infrastructure and social welfare net infrastructure and, the color of your toothpaste infrastructure. And, that's what they do. That's the trickery. They take that word and then they, they put it all over the place. Yeah, we got your infrastructure. We'll give so much to the arts and that'll be infrastructure and so on and so forth. And that really is the problem here, my friends. It's trickery. Now, the bigger problem is our media outlets don't cover it. So the point is, a lot of Americans are still getting their junk news from the junk Marxist media. And that is the biggest problem I think we have here. Nobody's really getting the out loud truth anymore. Unless you're tuning into programs like this, you wouldn't have a clue of what is going on here. You would just follow those headlines and believe that the sky really is falling over there and that they've got it all saved with spending more money. Pretty crazy here. Let's bring on our panel now here and join us on the program. Here is Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst and advisor in intelligence-led counterterrorism solutions. She trained in Israel, worked and lived there 16 years. She's the author of many great books and articles. She's a great voice. Her books are all in the America Out Loud bookstore, by the way. That link is on the right side of the front page at America Out Loud. And we sell a lot of books, by the way. A lot of our guests, our top guests and our experts and all those books are in there for you. So also on the panel here is Tom Wehrman is back with us. He's now you might remember that name. He's a former New York City school teacher, coach and adjunct professor. And he did leave. He was part of that whole New York City push to mandate vaccine everybody. He said, no, not doing it, man. And now he is a national voice for liberty. He's a columnist here and a commentator at America Out Loud. And just excited to have Ilana and Tom with us here to discuss Senator Ron Johnson's commentary and some of the top headlines here. All right. So starting with this, let's start with the infrastructure deal, the trickery. Ilana, let's start with you there on the trickery that that is often played out here in the infrastructure bill. You heard the senator's comments on it. But again, the dollars are not really for everybody really wants good infrastructure. I don't think that's a debate that I've gathered from anybody. But, the programs and all of the pork in there and the special interest is the real bigger problem. It's been passed now. A lot of people are upset with those Republicans because Pelosi could not have got it done. Ilana, let me ask you this. Say what you want. Well, I got to tell you what, honest to God here, and I know a lot of people didn't want to hear that when I said that to the senator up front, but Nancy Pelosi, we could use one of her in the conservative circles, but I'll tell you what, she's like a blessed magician up there. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, you're right. We do need someone like Nancy Pelosi on our side of the fence. I think the Republican leadership is abysmal in organizing and sort of corralling the various Republican legislators into some sort of cohesive opinion source, that will create legislation and prevent legislation. They have the power to prevent legislation, and they don't do it.
Why is it? Do you think they lack? I mean, we often talk about the Democrats having unity, the Republicans. So like in this particular case, it's perfect for that. There was no unity in the Republican Party, but yet the Democrats always stick together. The Republicans don't, more or less. And then that's how they got this passed. What will it take for that to happen, for people to rally around a principal point of state to it?
I think one of the reasons is that the Republicans actually believe in the democratic process, and they believe that every person is entitled to their opinion. The Democrats are led by a woman who is really obsessed with her power. She carries a hammer with her and she just beats down anybody who disagrees with her to the extent that she can. She's having some problems with the people who are called the squad. But just to give you an example of how screwed up her priorities are, she recently said that China's human rights abuses, which include the Uyghur genocide in Western China and the industry of China of forced harvesting of organs from unwilling donors, and the threats to U.S. national security, that all of those things are subsidiary to the issue of climate change. What is wrong with this woman? I mean, her priorities are so messed up. And I think it's an example, and yet she carries this hammer around and beats everyone into submission. Yeah.
Well, Ilana, she is the master of double speak, if there ever was one. Let me bring on Tom Weirman with us now as well. Tom, you know, let me ask you about Nancy Pelosi. She is a bit of a magician up there. And, you know, it's remarkable. I mean, she couldn't get this done. Think about this, Tom. She could not get this done with Democrat support. And although I say the Democrat Party usually is very unified and what have you, they really weren't unified in this case with the Marxist socialist left and the way that you call them the squad, but it really is they call it the word progressive, but it's Marxist socialist, really. They sort of broke ranks there a bit. And without Republican support, she was dead in the water. But yet she calls herself a master legislator. Of course, a lot of people have other adjectives for her. But what do you think of Pelosi and her? In fact, she's probably at the last days of being a speaker and her as a Speaker of the House. This is probably her last hurrah. And yet she still had victory here. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, Malcolm, you know, Nancy Pelosi is a master at keeping power. And I think getting back to your earlier question is, you know, why don't the Republicans have somebody like Nancy Pelosi? Because Republicans and typically conservatives respect the Constitution, in which they understand that their leaders are not the ones who are supposed to hold the power, but the people are supposed to hold the power. So holding power itself is not as important to Republicans as it is to the socialists, in which power is everything. And that's also probably the reason why she's able to organize her factions and they stand behind her so rock solidly, because all they care about is power. Whereas, you know, conservative nature, the conservative mind isn't as concerned about that. They're concerned about more of the welfare of the country as a whole. I don't believe we could say that about Democrats anymore.
Right. But if we are always taking what's called the high road, and I hear what you're saying, Ilana, I hear what you're saying both. But if we continue to, as you say, not worry about this and we let the Pelosi's of the world do what they do and we're taking whatever the so-called high road is, what's it going to do for us at the end of the day? I mean, you know, there's a lesson when it comes to schoolyard bullies. At some point, you've got to get down in the dirt and you've got to play with them on that level to be able to break that off. Does that make any sense? And Tom, what do you, because you were kind of faced with a similar thing within the mandated vaccine thing. You could have went along to play along, or you could have stood up and said, you know what, I've had enough of this and you're not forcing this crap on me. And you did that exactly. You know, I'm talking about, you know, principal point, but also fighting back with the same medicine that is being thrown at us. Aren't Republicans a little weak in that area?
Yeah, you know, I think they are. I do think that they are a little bit weak in that area. But I do think, in a sense, you know, I think taking the high road is important. I understand your concept of, like, you know, getting down and dirty a little bit, but we can never take the low road. You know, there's a difference between always taking the high road, getting a little bit down and dirty, and then going the low road where people are literally lied to. I mean, the Democrats pretty much lie to the American public about so many things. I mean, they say that these spending bills are really good for the country, yet they themselves, the legislators themselves, literally have no idea what's in them, other than the fact that their lobbyists, who basically are the ones who write the bills, are the ones creating all the monetary items in the bills that are going to be only serving to help them. The American people don't get helped at all. And it's up to the Republicans to really start calling out the Democrats for really what's going on. And you know what, as it relates to the mandate, you know, socialism had been taking over this country for quite a while. Right. Just nobody knew it. And now we just saw this massive red wave that happened all across the country. And even here in New York, on Long Island specifically, where we had about 75% of the victories going to Republicans, where it used to be really, you know, much more in the middle, but maybe in 75, maybe even 80%. The people have woken up because the Democrats have kind of overplayed their hand, where they in their spending bills, there's little increments of socialism taking over. But the mandate itself was something tangible that the people themselves actually see and feel. You know, the average American, when a massive bill gets, you know, passed, the $1.2 trillion, whatever it might be, it's just a number to them. They don't really know the impact of what it's really happening because it happens over time. But this mandate happened and it smacked a lot of people in the face. Now, I decided, no, I am absolutely not going to give my freedoms up. Other people said they have no choice. They have to give their freedoms up. They had to feed their family. And yes, they may have given in, but it still hurt and they still felt this aspect of socialism taking over. I think people are waking up now.
Yeah, too many people have been put in a very difficult position. You're exactly right, Tom, with this whole mandate story and forcing things onto people that should never be done. And my heart goes out to people. We get, again, hundreds and hundreds of emails every single day of the week here and barely can keep up with any of this. And the outcry is remarkable and people share their personal stories with us. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of them. And we actually deliver a lot of those back in the Q&As I do on the Voice of an Nation during the weekdays here on my weekday show. And people, you know, you hear the comments and the thoughts from folks, and you're exactly right.
And you know what else, Malcolm? It's amazing, though, the cry of the public, right, whether those who decided not to get the vaccine or those who are vaccinated and still think this is wrong, mm-hmm, are being completely ignored by the Democrat leadership. I mean, the country, we're not talking just conservative Republicans are against this mandate. We're talking about the many people on the Democrat side and independents as well are completely against this complete overreach of government. Yet President Biden is doubling down. Governor Hochul here in New York doubling down. Many governors around the country doubling down on forcing people to do something with their body that they don't want to do. Yeah. They are not hearing the public. And I don't think they care to.
Right, right. Well, let me pick up on something you just said that is so significant here. Let's come back and forth. Ilana, back to Tom brings up very interesting here. A lot of the local races, he's exactly right. Victories in the Republican side, bringing up Long Island here, but 75-80%. And we're seeing that in a lot of local races. Now, you know, politics locally, we've been on a big push telling people to get involved in their local politics if they want to make a difference. That's a telltale sign for America, actually, that people are getting involved. And you're seeing that now. Parents are getting involved in school boards and committees and council board seats and in local positions. And that really is a key to America, the saving point or the saving grace of America here. With all of that and this election and the telltale signs of what took place, Ilana, here, the outcry of that, Tom says, okay, now follow me on this. They move right away, right after the election. They knew the window was closed on the window of opportunity to really make their dent with socializing America. And I say that not as a talking point, but the fact is that's why you see the success of this infrastructure bill right now. And Pelosi twisted arms, and she twisted Republican arms to get that approved. It wasn't Democrat arms, Ilana. It was Republican arms that she twisted, 13 of them, in fact, that will forever be in history books now, that helped him get this legislative win. Had they not gotten this, they know the agenda would have collapsed. So they're kind of pulling. So let me say this to you. They are pulling victory right out of defeat is what they're doing. And this is remarkable. The fact that this even passes. Now, there's a lot more to happen, whether this other Build Back Better, bend over bill gets anywhere here in just a bit here. But what do you say to this analysis, Ilana, of what I'm presenting here of, where we go now as a nation, because the pushback here has been there, but the Democrats are seizing the moment, they're seizing the power, and they just did what they did. And what does that say to us?
Well, I think it says that the Democrats are really tone deaf, because they didn't learn anything from this election. What they
But they're not out to learn anything, Alana. I want to push back on a couple of things. They don't give a rat's ass about learning anything. They're just worried about victory, which is power, which is what Tom said and you said. So, but they just claimed victory out of defeat. Isn't that the story?
That's exactly what I'm saying. They were defeated in this last election across a wide range of geographical areas. Right. And they're completely ignoring the fact that they were defeated and the reasons why they were defeated. And they're doubling down on the very issues that caused them to be defeated in the polls. That seems to me to be something quite extraordinary, but it also is, I think, very optimistic from the point of view that Americans are waking up, and in spite of the Pelosi's and the squad and these people who really want to destroy America, Americans are rising up and saying, "You're not going to do this. We are not going to stand for it. We are not going to let you control what goes into our children's heads, and we're not going to let you control our bodies and enforce a vaccine that on us that we don't want. And you're not going to force us to use your power against the American people." And that is what the Americans said. That's what the American people said on November 2nd. That is not what Pelosi and the Democrats and the socialists heard. And so they are behaving in a way that I think is going to come back and bite them very hard.
Well, that's really the question, because if you add everything to what you just said, and then you add things like defunding the police, and which was defeated handily in Minneapolis. But again, it's that there's this, what we've been talking about for a long time, this socialist Marxist attempt to take over the country. And they've got a lot of the media behind them. That's really, that's the story nobody talks about. That really is my biggest story. And my biggest pet peeve, my friends, and let me put that out there right now. You see, everything we're talking about right now comes down to a narrative of what people are being fed. And the American people, by far and large, are being fed a different narrative. And it's not the truth narrative. It's a Marxist narrative of smoke and mirrors, which is what we've been talking about here. I think that this is the real evil in all of this. Tom, when you look at, you being a new voice and a guy that's just standing up, as you say, for liberty and principle driven, and you're a cursing conservative, and, this evil that has taken us over in so many ways, it really is tied to the media landscape, I think, because if the media was covering these stories legitimately, Tom, if they were really debating the whole story and being honest, and to any degree, whether it's border security, whether it's Afghanistan, it doesn't matter what topic you pick, anything, we'd have half a shot we'd have a more than half a shot. We'd have a winning strategy, because the American people would, but a lot of them are busy with their lives and they've tuned this stuff out. And isn't that the real problem we're dealing with here?
It's interesting, right? You're talking about the media, but it's news media, it's social media, it's schools and universities. They own entertainment, and they're also owning our culture. And what I'm going to say now is going to sound a little bit strange, is that even with all that, there is still a strong conservative movement. They own all these areas of influence, yet they still can't take the soul of the country away as hard as they try. Mm-hmm. Now, if we as conservatives start taking these things back ourselves, really start investing in, like myself, right? I was an educator, okay? But my job wasn't to educate my students on politics. My job was to educate them on health and fitness and things like that. But if we have conservatives going into the universities and into administrations and school boards and start, making our own entertainment companies in these areas too, we can start changing the culture. So despite the fact that we've been losing the culture battle for so long, we still haven't lost the war. And now people are starting to wake up. And they are getting involved. They're getting involved in going to school board meetings and fighting back against things like CRT and all the other nonsense that they're teaching our children. So there are areas of positivity that we could look at right now mm-hmm. and say, you know what? Our country isn't lost. I mean, look at myself right now. I'm actually looking to get, and as a teacher, you know, you would think I lost my job as a teacher. You'd think I'd be wanting to go get back into the teaching game again. That's actually not what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to get back. I'm looking to get into the political world now mm-hmm. because I want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. I want to help out. I want to put my foot down and say, no more. We're not doing this in this country anymore.
Yeah. I love it. I love it, Tom. And you really, I just hearing you here today, you're so well-spoken about the issues. And I was talking to Senator Johnson up front. We were talking about a citizen legislature. I mean, Senator Johnson became...
feel free to talk to him about me too, you know?
Exactly. Senator Johnson became a thing because he was just a businessman who ran back in 2010, to make that difference because he was in fear of our country. Of course, that was after the 8 years of a Marxist takeover from Barack Obama. So clearly we were in a heap of trouble. Remarkably so, he's now questioning where we're at. It takes such a toll on a guy like that as to what happens here. Very interesting. Let me fill folks in on a couple of things here as to what we're doing here. We're speaking to Alanna Friedman and Tom Wierman. And of course, you heard up front Senator Ron Johnson. Now, okay, so we look at the issues we're talking about right now and how important they are, and you know, trying to bring this the out loud truth to our awareness, and that can only be done by looking at all sides of the debate. You know, when we talk about what's really taking place in Congress and what's taken across our country here, we know the media is out of the picture. There's no truth there. Now, back to what Tom's saying, that makes our job even more difficult as Christian conservatives and people who love our Constitution, love our country, people who stand for the flag, people who get goosebumps when they see the flag or the anthem played in any sort. So that would be me. It's just something about us. And we know it. We can feel it in our bones. We can feel it in our DNA, right or wrong. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. If you're a patriot out there and you know how beautiful and amazing our country is and how God has gifted us with this amazing opportunity. Now we're put into this very difficult position here. And we really are pushing against a socialist Marxist agenda. So this is the kind of format we'll be doing with Viewpoint this Sunday moving forward now. 4 years, four incredible years of growing this program right here. This is our number one program on the network, and we've worked hard. It's a lot of work to put this program out, but you know what? It's really been worth it because it gives us the forum to be able to have these discussions. Now, I want your comments and your thoughts. And I'll give you an email address, and I'd be happy you'd share them back with us. You can share them at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com, and we'll get those in, and we'll use some of them on here as well if you like. But let us know what you think of this format and what we're doing here. So we'll always have that the upfront monologue, the guest, and then a terrific panel discussion with great voices each week to debate those issues. There's so much going on in our country. The stakes could not be higher. This is a rallying call for all of us to get involved. Now, listen, we're doing the heavy lifting back at AmericaOutloud.com, but we need your help. We need your help to get the truth out there and to help us save this amazing country. Now, it's not a partisan statement. It's really an American statement. It's a patriotic statement of this beautiful country we love and what it stands for. And so we need to push back against this evil takeover that has happened. And again, it's not a theory. It's really happening. And we all know it. Everybody's walking around on any side of the political aisle, and they're saying they know something's not right. Everybody says that, Democrat, Republican, Independent. Something's not right in our country. Listen, thank you for being with us on the mission here. And I hope you like this new format of Viewpoint this Sunday. And we'll see you back at America Out Loud. It's time to get involved and get loud.